out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 15th of October 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, I'm very pleased to say that today we are welcoming our most esteemed elder nationalist guest, Mr. I, back again to the show for the third time now. Mr. I, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, fine, thank you. Yes, getting on quite well.
Excellent.
Hey, I'd like to talk about John Amery and his creation of the British Free Corps. Now, when the war started, Amery was living in Italy with his French girlfriend. Of course, nothing sinister in that because Italy was a neutral country. And one of his neighbours was Ezra Pound, the American, eccentric American poet, of whom more later. Now, first of all, he became interested in broadcasting from Italy, and later he went to Germany. And he moved in the prisoner of war camps, recruiting British soldiers to fight in a unit called the British Free Corps, which was part of the Waffen-SS. And they were strictly to fight on the Eastern Front against the Russians. And that led to a lot of controversy when, at the end of the war, when he was arrested as a traitor and put on trial. Now, he was brought before the judge who told him, naturally asked him how he was going to plead. He said he was going to plead guilty. But the judge said to him, well, if you plead guilty, there's only one sentence I can give you, and that is death. And then he said, well, shall I be able to appeal? And of course, you are able to appeal against the sentence. And he brought all this up about whether the court was properly constituted. He went all through the British legal system, right back to the edict of the expulsion of the Jews. It was lots of things like that. To claim that the Treason Act of 1351 wasn't valid because there were Jews sitting in Parliament at the time. All a bit complicated, but he'd worked it out. And then in the end, he realised that whatever he did, see, the same as William Joyce, whatever he said or did, he knew what the sentence was going to be, and so he just accepted it. Yes, it's sad, really. His family, incidentally, were of Jewish origin, although by the time John came along, it had more or less, the Jewishness had more or less been bred out of it. And of course, his father was Leo Amery, a cabinet minister in Chamberlain's government at the outbreak of war. he had quite an interesting background. And as I say, a few people I speak to have ever heard of the British Free Corps. And say they were a section of the Waffen SS and fought on the Eastern Front, where he was captured and handed over to the British.
So he was captured while actually fighting for them?
Yeah, fighting in the Waffen SS against the Russians. Yeah.
Was there anybody else that was caught alongside him that was well known, or did anybody else face a similar punishment at the end of the war for fighting against the Bolsheviks?
No, there were certainly some odd characters, but they weren't well known. There was one chap who was a boxing champion and a wrestler, but nobody the ordinary person would have heard of. But they were an interesting bunch, really. And apparently they made jolly good soldiers. Well, of course, they'd all previously served in the British Army and had been battle-hardened in places like Italy and the Western Desert. Because there was one chap who was captured by the Italians in the Western Desert when Italy joined in the war. And he ended up joining the Free Corps. Yeah, and of course, most of them, I think quite a lot of them, weren't actually charged with treason. Because of the situation by the end of the war, when it became obvious that the Russians were going to be a long-term enemy. And in fact, of course, it was only 5 years, 5 years later that we were fighting a full-blown war in Korea against the communists. So that helped them escape any harsh punishment that they might have got in Britain, or rather they would almost certainly have got in Britain.
Well, you mentioned Ezra Pound there as well. Did you want to talk a little bit about him?
Oh, yeah, Ezra Pound. He was an eccentric poet, and he was a sympathiser of the fascists, and poor chap, when he was captured, they put him in the psychiatric wing of a federal penitentiary, making out that he was mad. Poor chap. Yeah, Ezra Pound. And because he was a lot of people were very taken by his poetry, which was not the conventional sort of poems. Yeah, so an interesting character altogether. And of course, they made out that he was mad. But in fact, he had more sense than the Americans as far as the political situation was.
That was the same thing that the communists did as well, wasn't it? They would make out that people that were against communism were mad, and they would put them in psychiatric wards.
Yeah. That was a favourite thing for them to do. And because we had like in the British Union of Fascists, that there were lots of oddballs. There was one who was actually a Jew. He was a member of the Clapham branch of the BUF and took part in all the activities, although he was Jewish. And after the war, he went into the entertainment industry and became the manager of Winifred Atwell, the black honky tonk pianist. So there's some really odd characters.
Well, he didn't have very much integrity.
Jolly good people, and of course good patriots. And as I mentioned in the previous broadcast, if the Jews had been loyal to Britain, then there would have been no trouble with them. But of course, they were against our brand of nationalism through being international bankers and, of course, leading communists. So we were bound to come into conflict with them.
I guess you get the odd exception to the rule, but it's very, very few and far between. And that would be John Amory, and that would be this character.
Yeah, yes, that's very true. Although so he no longer regarded himself as Jewish. So that was sort of bred out of the family by the time he came along. But yeah, it was. Well, as I mentioned before, Mosley just regarded the Jews as one of the scores of racial and religious minorities in the end Great British Empire. All sorts, from pagans to Muslims, as well as Christians and all the funny sort of religions. Yeah, so it played, say, whether religion did play a great part in it. Although, of course, all the Roman Catholics, they tended to support the fascist movement. And that, of course, leads me to another lie that the Jews told, especially at the time of Cable Street, that the Irish dock workers were against Mosley, which, of course, is quite untrue, because Mosley, as a politician, he opposed the use of the black and tans in Ireland. And, of course, being Catholics, the dock workers had no love for the Jews either. So that was completely false. The leader of the East London branch of the British Union, Mick Clark, he was Irish, and he was very popular. An interesting thing is he had gangs of children. He used to go around leafleting for the British, and he'd organise these children to do it. So he was a very well liked character, and as an Irish Catholic, he had no love for the Jews at all.
I think there was much more Catholic support for fascism than we are told today. They tried to distance themselves from it, but I think there was a lot of Catholic support originally.
Yes, the chap who became Mosley's secretary after the war, Geoffrey Ham, he converted to Roman Catholicism. And we were getting support from all sorts of, not exactly monks, but I don't know what they call them in the Catholic Church, but men of faith, And we had quite a following with them. This is rather strange. And Robert Rowe, who was the editor of the Action newspaper, he mentioned that in his he came from I think he came from Lancashire somewhere, and he had a very good person who regularly bought the newspaper from him and made regular contributions to the movement. When Germany invaded Poland, she changed her mind. Oh, fancy Germany attacking Catholic Poland. Oh, so we lost the supporter then. But of course, a person like that cannot have an overall view of things, just their own narrow little world. Yeah.
I thought Germany had they signed the Reichskonkordat, didn't they? So I mean, they were obviously linked with Catholicism.
That was due to the unfair treatment Germany received at Versailles in 1919. The inclusion of an ancient part of Germany, which had been German for centuries. You know, of course, in a landmass, you get movement across borders. But this place had been 100% German for at least 400 years. And, of course, to put a corridor through that, leaving, I think it's about 1 million German people under Polish rule. This is obviously going to lead to trouble. And as Lloyd George said at the Versailles conference, when he saw the proposed corridor, he said, this could well be the cause of another war. And unfortunately, he was right. Yeah.
Tragic. You brought up Cable Street there earlier. Did you want to talk a little bit about that and the lies that were told about that?
Yeah. Well, it was in 1936. And it was the fourth anniversary of founding of the British Union. And Mosley had arranged for a march to the East End to speak at four different venues. They assembled at, because it was called, that's right, Mint Street. And a lot of fighting broke out at the underground station there, which is now called Tower Hill, but it's called Mint Street in those days. There's a neutral shot of Tommy Moran in his British Union uniform being attacked by a Jewish gang. And He was the naval middleweight champion before the war. He set to knocking these Jews out one by one. But of course, he eventually succumbed to a lead-filled chair leg wielded by a Jew called Jack Comer, who during the war became notorious as Jack Spot, the king of the black market. And that was really the only fighting between the black shirts and the Jews. But of course, they made out that the march was to intimidate the Jews in East London. Capel Street wasn't on the route of the march at all. Of course, they created this big fuss by overturning lorries and barricading the entrance to the street. And the only fighting that took place was when Sir Philip Game, who was the Commissioner of Metropolitan Police, ordered the Black Shirts to discontinue their march and go back to their headquarters in Westminster at the time. And the only fighting that took place was between the police and the Jews when they set out to clear the street of all the barricade that they made there. So that was no intention of intimidating them. You see, the situation then in the poorer districts of London or any big city is like it is now, where the Labour councils have abandoned the native British people and have led these huge black ghettos to spring up amongst them. And it wasn't a question of the Black Shirts marching through these streets to intimidate the Jews, but to give succour to the British people who the Labour Party had abandoned.
So they hadn't even planned to go anywhere near Cable Street then?
No. No, it wasn't on the march at all.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. You see, and of course, there's even a memorial in the street there about the Battle of Capel Street when the people of East London rose up against the Blacks. You know, this is a complete lie. A complete lie. Yeah.
So do you think the people of London were supportive of the Black Shirts then? It was really just this Jewish contingent that were against them?
Well, the Jews and the Communists, yeah. The Jews and the Communists. And I must say they overlap considerably because most of the Communists were Jews anyway.
And particularly violent, from what you were saying there. What about this communist then that became the leader of the black market? Why wasn't he out fighting? Why wasn't he conscripted to go out fighting? How come he was back there and was able to start up a black market then?
Of course, that was their opportunity during the war. There was a story in the East End of London during the war that the Jews more or less lived down the air raid shelters during the period of the Blitz of the winter of 40-41, and that they only emerged during the day to conduct their black market activities. Which is why it was true. They'll say Jack Homer, He did very well in the black market, and they called him Jack Spot. I suppose Spot would be to do with cash on the nail or something like that, wouldn't it? To describe a person as Jack Spot. There must have been some reason. Yeah, the devils.
Was there much crime that went on during the Blitz then? I mean, like, if you look at things now, if there's, like, floods or the electricity goes out and you've got an area that's filled with blacks, then they loot and they pillage and they steal everything they can and smash shop windows. What was the situation like during the Blitz? Was there much crime that went on?
Well, during the Blitz, of course, the bombs had smashed the windows and looting was a great problem. And unfortunately, even policemen were accused of losing. So it's a difficult situation, isn't it, when you imagine a shop is bombed, all the goods are scattered everywhere out in the road and that. The temptation to pick it up when it would probably be sport anyway, when the farmer played the hoses on it. A difficult situation altogether.
Well, that's a bit different to deliberately smashing the windows and taking stuff, which is sort of what we see going on today.
Of course, there may have been the odd occasion, like there's always have been smash and grab raids, haven't there? But no, this would be shops that had bombed where the even if the structure of the shop wasn't damaged, nearly always the glass windows would be broken. So the opportunity was there.
Obviously, over the years, you must have seen a massive increase in crime, and particularly at the moment, we're hearing about all these stabbings that are taking place in the multicultural centres. Do you recall any stabbings happening 70 years ago?
No. There wasn't much in the way of muggings or fighting with knives or anything like that. There were criminal gangs, obviously, but they used to rule their own pitch, and anybody who started that nonsense would be dealt with by the gangsters themselves. It's an odd situation. Yeah.
And was there much of a Jewish role in gangsterism?
Well, they tended not to loot, but somehow or other, you know the saying, it fell off the back of a lorry, that sort of thing. They managed to get hold of stuff that was in short supply, and people used to buy it off. Of course, that was really a crime to buy anything on the black market.
So they were like fences. Because I know in Germany there was a whole criminal language that developed out of Yiddish. References to things to break into houses, and it would be called a Moses stick or something like that, because of Moses parting the Red Sea or something like that. And they had all this criminal language, which actually had its roots in Yiddish. So as well as running the banking system at one end of society, at the other end of society, you would have them involved in crime, the gangsterism in America, and obviously fencing here during the war, fencing these stolen goods, these looted goods.
Yes, I don't think any of the big gangsters were Jews. Because, you know, in America, of course, with the notable exception of Al Capone, who was Italian, but there's like Jaime Weiss and Murder Incorporated in America, that was a Jewish organization, but they tended not to be the gangsters in London. They did it by more subtle means, I think.
I think the Krays were Jewish, weren't they? But that was a bit later on.
Oh, the Kray brothers, yeah. Their father was Jewish, and their mother was of Irish gypsy descent. So they were quite a mixture.
what a combination! What a lethal combination, yeah. Gypsy and Jew.
Yeah, the the Cray twins. Of course, one of them was a notorious homosexual, one of the twins. Because when he was arrested, when he was in bed with a boy, they found him in bed with a boy when he was arrested.
And connections to the politicians as well. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Mr. I. That's been brilliant. Absolute goldmine of information you are. I'm so thankful for you coming on. And thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Carolyn Yeager. God bless and hail victory.